Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, First Canto, Chapter 5, Narada's Instructions on Srimad Bhagavatam, Text 13. Everybody here speaks English. That must mean, doesn't everyone here speak English? Yes. Ato Mahabhaga Bhavana Mogadik.
Ato Mahabhaga Bhavana Mogadik.
Suchi Shrava Satyarato Drita Vrata. Arukramasya Kila Bhandha Muktaye.
Arukramasya Kila Bhandha Muktaye.
Samarina Nusmara Tad Vicheshtitam. Ato Mahabhaga Bhavana Mokhadrik.
Ato Mahabhaga Bhavana Mokhadrik.
Shruti Shrava Satyarato Dhrita Vrata.
Shruti Shrava Satyarato Dhrita Vrata.
Urukramasya Khila Bhandha Muktaye.
Urukramasya Khila Bhandha Muktaye.
Samadhinanu Smara Tad Vicheshtitam. Oh, therefore, Mahabhaga, highly fortunate, Bhavan, yourself, Amoghadrik, the perfect seer, Shuji, spotless, Shrava, famous, Satcharata, having taken the vow of truthfulness, Dhritavrata, fixed in spiritual qualities. Urukramasya, of the one who performs supernatural activities. God. Akila, universal. Bandha, bondage. Muktaye, for liberation from. Samadhina, by trance. Anusmara, think repeatedly and then describe them. Tat vicheshtatam. Various pastimes of the Lord. Translation. This is Narada Muni speaking. O Vyasadeva, your vision is completely perfect. Your good fame is spotless. You are firm in vow and situated in truthfulness. And thus you can think of the pastimes of the Lord in trance for the liberation of the people in general from all material bondage. Let's read the purport, Josh.
People in general have a taste for literatures by instinct. They want to hear and read from the authority something about the unknown, but their taste is exploited by unfortunate literatures which are full of subject matter for satisfaction of the material senses. Such literatures contain different kinds of mundane poems and philosophical speculations, more or less under the influence of Maya, ending in sense gratification. These literatures, although worthless in the true sense of the term, are variously decorated to attract the attention of the less intelligent people. Thus, the attractive living entities are more and more entangled in material bondage without the consideration for thousands and thousands of generations. Sri Narada Rishi, being the best among the Vaishnavas, is compassionate towards such unfortunate victims of worthless literature, and thus he advises Sri Vyasadeva to compose transcendental literature, which is not only attractive, but can also actually bring liberation from all kinds of bondage. Srila Vyasadeva, or his representatives, are qualified because they are rightly trained to see things in true perspective. Srila Vyasadeva and his representatives are pure in thought due to their spiritual enlightenment, fixed in their vows due to their devotional service, and determined to deliver the fallen souls rotting in material activities. The fallen souls are very eager to receive novel information every day, but the transcendentalists like Vyasadeva or Narada can supply such eager people in general with unlimited news from the spiritual world. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that the material world is only a part of the whole creation, and that this earth is only a fragment of the whole material world. There are thousands and thousands of literary men all over the world, and they have created many, many thousands of literary works for the information of the people in general for thousands and thousands of years. Unfortunately, none of them have brought peace and tranquility on the earth. This is due to a spiritual vacuum in those literatures. Therefore, the Vedic literatures, especially the Srimad Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, are specifically recommended to suffering humanity to bring about the desired effect of liberation from the pangs of material civilization, which is eating the vital part of human energy. The Bhagavad Gita is the spoken message of the Lord Himself, recorded by Vyasadeva, and the Srimad Bhagavatam is the transcendental narration of the activities of the same Lord Krishna, which alone can satisfy the hankering desires of the living being for eternal peace and liberation from miseries. Srimad Bhagavatam, therefore, is meant for all the living beings all over the universe for total liberation from all kinds of material bondage. Such transcendental narrations of the pastimes of the Lord can be described only by liberated souls like Vyasadeva and his bona fide representatives, who are completely merged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Only to such devotees do the pastimes of the Lord and their transcendental nature become automatically manifest in the dint of devotional service. No one else can either know or describe the acts of the Lord, even if they speculate on the subject for many, many years. The descriptions of the Bhagavatam are so precise and accurate that whatever has been predicted in this great literature about 5,000 years ago is now exactly happening. Therefore, the vision of the author comprehends past, present, and future. Such liberated persons as Vyasadeva are perfect not only by the power of vision and wisdom, but also in oral reception, in thinking, feeling, and all other sense activities. A liberated person possesses perfect senses, and with perfect senses only can one serve the Supreme Proprietor, Hrishikesh, Sri Krishna, the Personality of Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam, therefore, is the perfect description of the all-perfect personality of Godhead by the all-perfect personality Srila Vyasadeva, the composer of the Vedas.
An intelligent person understands that the goal of life is to attain freedom from bondage to material existence. Now, actually, everybody has a goal in life. And when we analyze our activities, when we analyze the circumstances that we find ourselves in material existence, it always comes down to one thing. That is, sense gratification. After all is said and done, this is the bottom line in our relationships, in our economic development, in our academic affairs. In other words, whether we're trying to earn money or learn something or share with someone, after all is said and done, the basis, the goal is the same, sense gratification. It always ends with that. So an intelligent person tries to see through to the end of the process. An intelligent person sifts through his or her activities and penetrates to the conclusion. In other words, after all is said and done, what am I actually about? What am I actually achieving? And as we said, in material existence, what you're actually about is simply sense gratification. After all is said and done, this is the embarrassing truth. For some, it's embarrassing, but for others, it's very wonderful. Now, as intelligent persons, we have to ask ourselves, am I willing to settle for just this? That same old taste that generation after generation has pursued. We all like to think of ourselves as different and unique. I am special. My English is okay, everyone can understand, not too big words. It's alright? Huh? You should translate. Okay. Which part didn't you understand so far? All of it. You understood what I was explaining about how an intelligent person analyzes life and sees that the conclusion of everything is always sense gratification? Sense gratification. You may be making money, you may be studying something, you may be having relationship, but the ultimate conclusion is always sense gratification. Understand? In this way, generation after generation of people are simply pursuing the same stale taste. Stale? The opposite of fresh is stale. Like when bread, when you leave bread out for 2 weeks. This is the embarrassing truth. Embarrassing? You understand? Yeah. Now, we like to think of ourselves as being very fresh and unique and special. But actually, when we look at the truth is very embarrassing. You just stop me if you don't understand something. The truth is very embarrassing. Now, why is it then that we think we are special when there is nothing special that we are doing? This is the influence of Maya, illusion. That makes us think we are special, we are unique. Maya, you know what Maya is, yes. Illusion makes us think that I'm getting a fresh taste from something. I'm getting a special taste. When actually, the sad truth is that the so-called fresh taste is the same old thing that even the animals get. It's very embarrassing for us to think. When I was in my early 20s, with the help, of course, of Srila Prabhupada's books, I began to think like that. And it was very humiliating for me. Humiliating? Makes you feel very small. Very humiliating. I mean, I am going through so much trouble studying and making money and having love affairs, only to get the same taste that the cats and dogs are getting. I was very much affected by this understanding. Now, when we're in Maya, we don't see things like that. We see that I'm just me, and I'm trying simply to get some pleasure. What is wrong with that? I'm trying simply to satisfy myself. What is wrong with that? I want a satisfying situation. I want some money. I want some education. I want a nice relationship. What is wrong with that? Can there be anything more to life? But when we look through the eyes of knowledge, we see the same old conclusion, sense gratification. The same conclusion that is available to the cats and dogs and fish and birds. Then we become very embarrassed. This is the sad truth of material existence. But what is a human being supposed to do? If you do not try for sense gratification, what to do then? How can we benefit ourselves? How can we benefit others? Benefits, you know? Okay. To think. We should think. How can I benefit myself? How can I benefit others? Now, if we cannot benefit ourselves, how can we benefit others? Just like if I say to Ananda, Ananda, I really care for you. That will have no meaning if I cannot benefit myself and care for myself. In other words, if I don't know who I am, what good can I do for Ananda? I'm simply making an illusion. I give myself a false sense of importance. You understand? Psst. I give myself a false sense of importance. Translate. I give myself a false sense of importance. You're tired, this one. I give to myself a false vision of how I am important. Oh, I am helping Ananda. But when we use our intelligence and look and see what is actually happening, then we can see, what am I actually doing for Ananda? I am bewildered. I am in illusion. I don't know who I am. But I like to say, I am helping Ananda. So if Ananda is smart, what will she say? She'll say, you don't know who you are, so what can you do for me? I'm already in enough illusion. I don't need any more. She'll say, if she's smart, if you want to help me, then first you help yourself. In English, there is the expression, doctor, heal yourself first. Now, how do we heal ourselves? It is a good thing to know before we present ourselves as helpers. It was not until Srila Prabhupada made this point that I ever thought about it. In this material world, people like to appoint themselves as helpers. Appoint, you understand? They like to give themselves the title or the position. I am helping. And then they get a false feeling of meaning in that way. You understand? I am helping. I'm a helper. I'm helping others. I'm helping her. I'm helping him. I'm a helper. But people, they're just cheating one another, we have to say. Because what can they actually do for someone else? When we look at this truth straight, then it is not so nice. What can I actually do for someone else? Just like, let's say, some young man says to Ananda, the young man says, Ananda, I love you. So if Ananda is smart, she'll say, well, that sounds nice, but what can your love actually do for me? Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam train you to have that kind of intelligence. That is real intelligence. The so-called love of this world is simply an excuse for your own sense gratification. Everyone understand? Okay. Translation. Your so-called love in this world is simply an excuse for your own sense gratification. You can look and see so many people, old and young. What can these people actually do for each other? What is real benefit in life? Real benefit in life means to understand what you are and to free yourself from the bondage of material existence. Bondage? That is the actual purpose of civilization. That is the actual purpose of relationships, whether husband and wife, or father and son, or mother and daughter. In a real human civilization, everything is meant for the conclusion of how to escape bondage of material existence. But we don't have that kind of civilization now. The kind of civilization that we have now simply increases bondage, increases material desires, and allows people to never understand what they are. Allows? You understand? Yeah. And you're supposed to be happy in that way. The present civilization tells people, don't worry about who you are. Don't care. Don't think about where you are going or where you came from. Simply make money and try to please your senses. Yes, this is true. This is true. Do you agree? You agree? Do you understand? Do you agree? Translate. You agree? Right. But now what to do? We all agree, but what will we do? What should I do with my life? First, understand that you are not the body, you are spirit soul. Everyone understands that point. Ananda, you understand that. Josh, you understand it. Theoretically. This is a comfortable point for you, Kevin, that we are not the body, we are spirit soul. Alright. And for you, a comfortable, this is an okay point for you, that we are not the body? Mm-hmm. It is very easy to see. In theory. 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 But in practice, it's a little difficult. As Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, you have read Bhagavad Gita, Ananda?
I think I should tell you. Okay.
All right. As Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, Ananda, you have read Bhagavad Gita? No. So, the soul changes bodies just like we change dresses. If Kevin had seen his wife when she was 5 years old, he would have seen a different body. Yes? That five-year-old body is gone. Her 10-year-old body is gone. Her 15-year-old body is gone. Is the 20-year-old body gone? Okay. All right. So, although all these bodies are gone, something about her is the same, yes? Now, what is that? Have you captured it yet? What is it about? What is her name?
Ai.
What is it about Ai that doesn't change, although the body is always changing? And how to get in contact with that? I'm sure you wondered about this, yes? Yeah. For example, you have not seen Josh for how many years? 4 years. So, he looks different, yes? To some degree, yes? Yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, besides, he had dreadlocks then, and, yes, besides the wild things. Still, physically, he's different, yes? I mean, he's got, now he has shining complexion from following spiritual principles, and but otherwise, still the structure of his body is a little different. And if you had not seen him in 10 years, it would have been very different. So when you see somebody that you haven't seen for a long time, and you say, "Oh, how you've grown," what you're actually saying is, "Oh, how your body has changed." It's like when, if you go back to New Zealand after a long time to see your relatives, they'll say, "Oh, look at you now." What they really mean is, "Oh, your body has changed. But you are still the same basic person." So, using the examples Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita, anyone can see that they are different from the body. You have heard all these things before, yes? Okay. But hearing them again and again is not a bad thing. And then, of course, you've heard that, let us say, one day you come home from work, and E, she's laying on the floor, dead. It happens. It will happen to us all sooner or later. It will happen to us all sooner or later. But of course, we like to think that, oh, only after a long time will it happen to me. My body is fresh and young, and it will last forever. Death is only for old people. So, you come home from work, hard day at work, and you're anxious to see E, oh, now my day will become better. She'll have nice prasad waiting. And you walk into your house and she's laying on the floor. What would be your first reaction? Oh no! What's happened? You'd race up to her. You know, cold, her hand is cold, no pulse. What has happened? And then you cry out, ah! And maybe some neighbors or some friends, or they come running in. Probably in Japan they wouldn't do that. But maybe next door there was some gaijins. They would come. Kevin, my man, what's happening? What's wrong with you? And what would you say? She's gone. She's gone. Yes. But suppose I was the gaijin next door. And I was being, giving a smart answer. I said, what do you mean, Kevin? She's gone. She's right there. No, she's gone. My beloved she's left. How can I live without her? I said, come on, Kevin, she's right there. There she is. You don't understand. She's dead. She's dead and gone. No, she's right there. So the only way you can answer this situation is to understand that there's a difference between the person and the body. You're saying she's gone. I'm saying no, she's right there because the body is there. So you see, by your very words, you're admitting, without knowing it, that there's a difference between the person and the body. Understand, Ananda? You understanding? Yes. Now, what is the deeper conclusion? If I was the gaijin who lived next door, I would then bring this point out. I would say, well, you're telling me she's gone, and I say she's right there. So this means that the real E you never knew. You're saying that she's gone, but what is it that's gone? Then what would you say? How would you disagree? Yes. You would.
I wouldn't have listened.
You.
So I. Closed-minded, and it wouldn't have mattered what you would have said. That I would have disagreed.
You would have said, what that.
I'm not a religious person, and I don't believe in what I can't see.
Oh, really? You don't believe in what you're. The whole material world, all the knowledge of the material world is based on what you can't see. Have you ever, you're a musician, yes? Have you ever seen a musical note? Have you seen one? Just like a physicist has never seen so many subatomic particles. All right. Anyway, just like scientists, they've never seen so many small things. Similarly, a musician hasn't seen musical notes. You've seen a B flat?
No.
No. So you say that you weren't a religious person. That means you don't accept anything that you can't see. But actually, the fact is that whether you are material or spiritual, so much of your life is based on things you can't see. So the discussion we are having is actually not religious. It is simply based on common sense. There's this body laying on the floor that you used to call E. Now, why are you crying? The body is right there. You can see it. So, E is there. But you say, no, she's gone. Now, what is gone? Ah, I'm not a religious person. I don't want to get into this. Wait a minute. There's the body. Why you're not attracted? Is that a religious question? You're a practical man. There's the body of your beloved. You're not attracted anymore. Suppose then your old friend Josh happened to be in the neighborhood. Suppose your old friend Josh happened to be in the neighborhood. And he just, you know, he wanted to cause a bit of trouble like he can sometimes. Kevin, what's the problem? There's E. Grab her. Come on, what's the problem? Hold her hand. And what would you say? I'm not a religious man. This is not. What would you say? Now that she's dead, you can hold her. Yeah. There's so many popular songs like that. Keep an eye on your best friend. Yeah, but there's so many songs like that. Okay. So you would say, oh, Josh, yeah, she's dead. Now you can hold her hand. But if before she was dead, you know, if you did such a thing, Josh, we got to step outside. And just see the materialistic mentality. So now she's dead, you're not attracted anymore. Now the dear body of your beloved, you want to burn it. In Japan, you'd burn it. What happened? So this is not religion. This is a practical discussion. What is missing? Last week you were clutching the body tightly. This week you want to burn it. Yeah? So you see my point. This is not a religious discussion. This is practical. Not even last week, yesterday. Oh, you are my everything. I cannot live without you. I build my whole world around you. Today, you're burning the body. So, what is missing? Or else you're telling me that actually there's a kind of life that most people live in which they don't even want to think about these things. That's what you're saying, yeah? Just, hey. Hey, I don't understand it. I don't understand why it happened, but all I know is, you know, gotta get a new girlfriend. Sounds pretty dumb, doesn't it? So, let's say that Josh is there and he begins to needle you. Needle? Yeah, needle means he begins to poke you. Not tease, but just to push you a bit to understand things. Says, Kevin, just see, you actually didn't really know who he was. You never knew her. Her body, you're going to burn. But what made the body alive, you never knew. So Krishna consciousness is the process for getting in touch with the real person. Beyond the body and the mind. Mind is also not the person. Say, covering. You have a gross covering and a subtle covering. Simply to understand you are spirit soul, however, is just the beginning. You see, self-realization and Krishna consciousness go together. Krishna consciousness. Because you can't understand yourself fully unless you understand what you are a part of. It's like if I say, Kevin, you are a Kiwi. New Zealand.
Kiwi.
Kiwi. Yes. It's a New Zealander. That would be a meaningless statement unless we understand what it is that you're a part of. You're a citizen of this country. Right? A New Zealander exists in relation to New Zealand. And if I say, you're Japanese, it is a meaningless statement unless there is a Japan that E is in some way part of. Now if I say, Ananda, you are a daughter. That is a meaningless statement unless there is a mother that she's the daughter of. And did Ananda just pop into existence without a mother or father? So when we say Ananda, then we know that there's a mother or father somewhere. So if I say that you are spirit soul, what is it that you're part of? Therefore, anyone can see that to understand the spirit soul, you also have to understand Krishna, the supreme soul. Now, what is the big mystery? If indeed we are spirit soul, then why are we trying to satisfy ourselves with matter?
もし私が本当に精神的な魂、精神となるならば、どうしてこう物事に
小さな物事で自分たちを満足させるとしているんでしょうか。
How many have asked yourself that question?
こういう質問をしたことがある人。
Lalita, you asked, not Lalita, Kishori, I was talking to Lalita yesterday. You've asked yourself that question? Ananda? If I am spirit soul, then why do I try to get pleasure from matter? So Josh, wouldn't you say that's a practical question? Would you agree, Kevin? It's not like highfalutin, smoky religious talk. It has to do with, what am I made of? Only by understanding that can I understand what my pleasure is. So if I am spirit, then why do I try to enjoy matter? So automatically our whole life becomes focused properly when we understand what we are. When we understand what we are, then we can actually benefit others. Relationships become clear. Then we can know what real love is. Real love means to help someone understand their spiritual identity and to understand Krishna. And false love of the material world means, I'll use the word love while simply trying to enjoy your matter. You can just imagine. Suppose I grab this microphone. Oh, I love this microphone. When I hold it in my hands, I get such a feeling. So you say that's crazy. But why is it that when we get some other matter in our hands, then, oh, it's very special. Matter is matter. We actually love Krishna and we love others because they are part of Krishna. But in our craziness, we cannot see Krishna anymore, so we are mad after matter. And we think that matter will satisfy us. But that is not possible. But generation after generation of persons chase the same illusion. People form combinations for chasing the false pleasure of matter. Did you guys used to play blues music? Are you heavy metal guys? the dreams of illusion that conditioned souls have, it reminds you of one old blues song. The dreams or the illusions.
うん。
I'm going to move, baby, way on the outskirts of town. This is the guy he's telling his girlfriend. I'm going to move way on the outskirts of town. Meaning, you know, he's going to... Together, they're going to get a house on the outskirts of town. There won't be anybody there always trying to bring us down. When we move way on the outskirts of town. Like, it's always a dream, you know? Let me tell you, baby, we're going to be as happy as we can be. I'm going to give you 7 children, and they're all going to look like me. When we move way on the outskirts of town, there won't be anybody there always trying to bring us down. Always there's some dream going on in our head, but I'm going to get good sense gratification. And I'm going to get away from all the people who are trying to bring us down. I had another one, favorite one by B.B. King. He was one of my idols. He really sing, our love is nothing but the blues. Baby, how blue can you get? He's going through all the things he did to please his woman. I brought you a brand new penthouse. You said it was just a shack. I bought you a $20 dinner. You said thanks for the snack. I gave you 7 children, and now you want to give them back? I've been downhearted, baby, ever since the day we met. Our love is nothing but the blues. Baby, how blue can you get? So, this is all about the dream of trying to enjoy matter. And we're always disappointed. But what else are we going to do? Therefore, the prime necessity of life is to understand the factual existence of spiritual pleasure. Then we know how to have proper relationships. Then we know how to benefit others. So in this way, I hope everyone can see that Krishna consciousness is very practical. It involves what is real pleasure. But we are so proud, we always think, I know what pleasure is. You don't have to tell me about that. That's our arrogance. Arrogance. This shows how arrogant we are. Arrogant, proud. Proud. Okay. Yes. We all assume, I know what pleasure is. I know what a good time is. I don't need anyone to tell me what pleasure is. But actually, we're so ignorant. But when we have this pride, it is very difficult to understand Krishna consciousness. And that pride is so foolish because it's based on this temporary body.
Pride
one little movement of a razor blade somewhere on our body and all our pleasure is finished immediately. But we're so proud. Yes, I know what pleasure is. Sometimes, Kishore, when you're walking, do you study the old people when you're walking outside? Yes. Do you think one day I'll be like them? Do you look at their faces and think, where is their pleasure? What about you, Kevin? Can you see yourself as an old man? And so, what do you think your conclusions about life would be then? If he stays with you all your life, she'll be an old lady. You'll be an old man. Everything is so painful. Did you know when you're old, your mind is full of the same desires, but your body can no longer execute? So you're very depressed and you go crazy. So what would the two of you do? Just wait for death to come? Because you're a practical man. Yes, that is material practicality. Just wait for death to come. There's nothing else. That kind of life is not for the intelligent person. Now, how are we actually going to get some experience that there is a spiritual reality? An intelligent person thinks like that. So this process of Krishna consciousness is not a belief. You read Bhagavad Gita? Are you read it? Okay. Have you? Which chapter are you on?
Two.
So you have not come across one verse yet where Krishna says, "Just believe, Kevin. Just believe. Just believe. Only believe." You haven't. There's no verse like that. See, that's what you're afraid of. I don't want any religious belief. I'm a practical man. I gotta see it to believe it. Feel it to believe it. Practical man. Are you guys lying red men? See, in New Zealand, the men pride themselves on which kind of beer they drink.
Which kind of what?
Beer.
Yeah.
Beer.
Beer.
Yeah, you know what beer is?
Yeah.
Okay, so they many men, they, you know, it's a sign of their manliness, you know, drinking beer.
How much they can drink?
Yeah, how much and also what kind they drink, and it's translate. But they were transcendental to all those distinctions. They were transcendental to the various differences between beers, brands of beer. They were transcendental to which kind of beer they drank. whatever the whichever brand was on sale at the store, that's what they would get. Yes, but for many men, they identify with a particular brand. Like Lion Red, there's a beer called Lion Red, and that's, you know, when they try to sell it, they always say that this is for the real men. And these big signs all over the city advertising. Like big letters. The man's telling his wife, "Do you want me to spend more time in the kitchen, dear?" Then, put more Lion Red in the refrigerator. Very gross. Is that like this in Japan?
Well, much worse.
They have their kinds of alcohol that they try identify with, the men. Anyway, so persons like that, they think they know what's practical. Good beer, good woman, good party. This is a practical thing. And they think Krishna consciousness is some kind of belief. Religion, which is only needed by weak persons. But actually, Krishna consciousness is about experience of spiritual pleasure. So if we actually want to taste the spiritual reality, then chant Hare Krishna. So Ananda, does chanting Hare Krishna, did it cost you any money to chant? If someone wants to see whether Krishna consciousness is for real, all they have to do is chant Hare Krishna. And then all the things that we do here start to make sense. But what do most people say? I have no time. I don't care. And this way they spoil their temporary human life. If we are spirit soul and part and parcel of Krishna, the Supreme Soul, then can you give me a process by which I can experience that? That's the way an indulgent person thinks. So, doesn't this sound like a fair proposal? For a practical person? What do you think?
Right.
But what does our mind tell us? Oh, I have no time. When I'm older, I'll do that. Or else, but there are many paths. Now, which path are you following? None, but there are many paths. Paths. This is how bogus we are. It takes an honest person to actually see how bogus we are. You know what I mean? We think a lot of ourselves. We think a lot about ourselves. Actually, though, we're all very bogus in Kali Yuga. So to become Krishna conscious, you first have to accept that you're bogus. So that's the big difference in Josh that you see. Basically, he accepted that he was bogus. Now you start to understand how he's, you know, yes. Otherwise, we live a lie to ourselves. And then we live the lie with others too.
Yeah, I really care for you. You're my everything. I cannot see how I can live my life apart from you.
These are all words we speak simply to keep a situation near us that is temporarily giving us pleasure. An honest person would say, let's say if there was some young man pursuing Ananda, if he was honest, he would say, actually, I can't do anything for you. I don't know who I am. I'm just concerned with my own sense gratification. I don't know why I'm in this world, but I'm just looking for someone to be bewildered with together. I mean, you don't know, I don't know, so let's be ignorant together. And we'll call it love. Oh, love, I'm in love. Oh, we'll be ignorant together. Love. This is bogus. So persons who are attached to being bogus have a difficult time becoming Krishna conscious. Whether by their own effort or with the help of others, or through a conference, a big meeting, as long as they are attached to being bogus, it's very difficult for them to be Krishna conscious. That is the verdict of Prahlad Maharaj in the 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Matirna Krishna paratasvato ba mito vipadyeta grihavratanam adantagobe vishitam tamishanam punapunas charvara charvaranam. Someone's inclination to Krishna cannot be revived if they are so attached to being bogus. Their Krishna conscious inclinations cannot be revived by their own effort, someone else's help, or a group effort. Because of their uncontrolled senses, they simply ruin their life. And what is their reward? Reward. What is their pay? Reward. Puna punas jarvata jarvananam. They get to chew that which has already been chewed. Suppose your father, Kevin, he says, Kevin, I have something wonderful for you to chew. I've been chewing on it for 50 years. I got it from your grandfather who chewed it for 70 years. Now, I take it out of my mouth, this thing that has been chewed by generations of our family, and I pass it to you to get the juice out of. What would you say? Oh, I'm very honored. Thank you for this wonderful inheritance. Thank you for this family love. No one will want to chew something that has already been chewed by someone else. There was no taste, no juice for the grandfather, none for the father, and there'll be none for you. But then you want to have children and you'll pass the same thing to them. Ah, Kevin Jr., come here, lad. I have something for you. Now you can chew what I've chewed. That is actually criminal. Real love means to stop this process of material bondage of chewing the chewed. By getting an actual taste of Krishna consciousness, you can drop these illusions. By getting a taste of Krishna consciousness, then you can drop these illusions. Everything depends on our getting an actual taste of the spiritual reality. So please forget this nonsense, which makes us think Krishna consciousness is a belief. Should I accept this belief or should I not accept this belief? Sometimes you think like that, Ananda? Do you think like that sometimes? No, you just do what your mother says. That's all right. If the mother is giving the perfect thing, then you should just do what your mother says. But sometimes you think like that, E? Is this the right belief for me? And you? Yeah, is this a good religious belief? I'm a practical man. Does this belief fit me? Is this belief good for my family? Is this belief good for he and me? Forget belief. Krishna consciousness is not a belief. It's practical experience of superior pleasure. Is the process for keeping us away from inferior pleasure and getting the superior pleasure. Simple as that. But we're proud. I know what pleasure is. How can I live without certain things? Oh, it's quite easy. So we have to decide, are we willing to clean ourselves from the low pleasure and accept the high pleasure? All right, any questions? So this was a practical person's discussion. Life, love, real pleasure. Life, love. Real pleasure. Spiritual enlightenment. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We covered many topics. Also, how to be bogus. Freedom from lion red consciousness. Or freedom from whatever brand is on sale consciousness. Because they are not willing to accept step number one, that they're bogus. Ethics, humility. They are proud. I know what's real. I know what's pleasure. I'm a good person. It takes humility to accept that we are not genuine. Genuine? We are not for real. Everyone likes the feeling. I know something. I don't know everything, but I know a lot of things. I can fix my own car. I know something. My girlfriend's been with me for 1 year. I know something. For those who are proud, it's very difficult to become Krishna conscious. Because when you read Bhagavad Gita, you'll see that Krishna totally annihilates all your misconceptions. Some people can't handle it. Who is this Krishna? What does he think he is? Sometimes you meet people and they say, no, Krishna is not the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not Krishna. You say, oh, then you must, in order to say that, you must have some idea. Who is the Supreme? No, I have no idea, but not Krishna. If you say not Krishna, you must have some idea of what is. So pride, arrogance causes this lack of ability to see clearly. It's really amazing how proud we are.
Those who are suffering from sickness, or those who are very poor or in a really difficult condition, and those people start to wonder, what am I, or what is happiness, or what is my life, or why I don't have to be in this condition. So then maybe those people have more chance to start to think of the God.
Yes.
And maybe they are more fortunate than the so-called happy people who can buy anything what they like or...
Yes, that's why Krishna makes sure that this world has misfortune, because it, in misfortune, people will think, what is life all about?
Do you know
Japanese by now? Little piece, was that Skoshi? This is our message of practicality. Sometimes people don't like it, though. In New Zealand, I have experience. Many persons I say this to, they don't like it at first. But then, later, they come back and say, oh, you were right. At first, though, they don't like it. Who does he think he is saying these things? But then they start thinking about it. And they can't defeat it. It's actually not that I am saying. I am simply presenting the message of Bhagavad Gita as it is. So it's not that I am supposedly so smart. I'm simply repeating the message of the Supreme Intelligent. But at first people think, you think you know everything. In one sense that is true. One who knows Krishna knows everything. But you can also know everything. It is not restricted to just a few persons. The greatest love you can show someone is to help them get out of material illusion. Suppose Ananda, she meets some guy and he says to her, I just want to stay together with you in a burning house. And we'll call it love. She, no, this is madness, yes? She says, well, if it's true that we're living in a burning house, then get me out of it. That'll show your love. Or at least get me out of the burning house and we'll talk about it later. In this way, when you're Krishna conscious, you can go on and on analyzing these things. By chanting Hare Krishna, your vision becomes clear. When there's clear vision, then you can actually have real fun. Otherwise, what else is there? Otherwise, what else is there? I'm gonna move, babe. way on the outskirts of town. There won't be nobody there, always trying to bring us down. All right. Hare Krishna.